Let's begin with a footnote to last time's discussion in regard to David Joyce. We saw him as one who devoted his life to the pursuit of luxury and high living, fueled by vast quantities of the finest of liquor, in the setting of his luxurious Adirondack-style great camp. His Itasca Lumber Company was the largest in the county, and it sent more trees down the Mississippi than any other. Those trees had supplied the wealth that he lived on. He never took an active role in the company he had come to own. We had noted that he did acquire and read first edition books, but he also had a secret. He had another collection, unknown to anybody. He never discussed it. He never showed it to anyone. When he died in 1936 at age 52, unknown to anyone, that collection passed to his daughter Beatrice. She followed her father's inclination, living in luxury amidst heavy drinking and a life of partying. She died at age 49 in 1972, never having made known what she came to possess. Only after her death did that remarkable collection made by David Joyce come to light. Now here's an article in the Des Moines Register. The Itasca Lumber Company had offices in Iowa as well as other places. So from the Des Moines Register in 1973, a fabulous collection of literary manuscripts has emerged from a one-time lumber fortune. The manuscripts, which brought a record $896,000, almost $1 million, at an auction 2 weeks ago in Chicago, included letters by George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, poet Lord Byron, original manuscripts by Alfred Lord Tennyson, Mark Twain, Conan Doyle, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, James Fenimore Cooper, Edgar Allan Poe, Oscar Wilde, Robert Louis Stevenson, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Percy Shelley, Robert Browning, and many others. A New York dealer was quoted as saying, "In my 48 years in the business, this is the greatest sale. With the supreme quality of the material, there's never been anything like it." The manuscripts were secretly collected years ago by David Joyce, heir to the big Joyce lumber fortune. Questions puzzling American dealers and collectors are, from whom did David Joyce buy all his literary treasures? When and why? How much did he pay for them? This man Joyce, half a century ago, was quietly accumulating these treasures without any dealers in the country even aware of his existence. A George Washington letter to Patrick Henry, said to be the best Washington letter in existence, brought $57,000 at that auction. A letter of Lincoln discussing his outlook on the 1860 election sold for $15,000. A first edition of Poe's Murders in the Rue Morgue went for $20,000. And on the list goes with many, many more famous names. A total of 398 items was sold at the auction. What an interesting story. And I certainly would like to know more. And did he sit and study and admire what he had gathered? Why did he want to keep them secret? He wasn't a very friendly person. Maybe he liked to sit and gloat over them and just think that he was the only one who could see them. No way of ever knowing that. But what a remarkable collection he had made, and how strange a footnote that is to all the other things we've looked at about David Joyce. Judy Garland was, of course, born in Grand Rapids. That was in 1922. In 1960, amidst the plethora of woes that had come to be so well known to her devoted fans, oh, nervous breakdowns, reliance on drugs and alcohol, failed marriages, missed sessions in movie studios, and broken stage performance contracts, in the midst of what had become a very unhappy life, and just 9 years before her death at age 47 from a drug overdose, in an interview, Judy talked about her memories of Grand Rapids. Her thoughts are disjointed and unorganized, but they certainly are poignant. As we have been looking at Grand Rapids, we've seen it as an appealing place that was beloved by many, but probably none so much so as by Judy Garland, as she looked for some stability and happiness in her life. She said, "It's a swell state, Minnesota. I'm proud it's my home, and I know there are a few hundred thousand of us who feel the same way. We've got to pull together, we Minnesotans. Isn't that interesting that after such a short time, she still thought of herself as a Minnesotan? She says, I do remember it was terribly happy and possibly the only kind of normal, carefree time in my life, and that was only for 3 years. And that's pretty sad when you look back at your life and only the first 3 years were normal and happy, huh? At the very beginning, I can go back to that time, you know, and I remember my mother and father. My father owned the New Grand, a little theater in Grand Rapids. We had a lovely house, and he was very successful. My mother used to play the piano at the theater. Grand Rapids is a beautiful, beautiful town. It's right in the middle of the Iron Ranges of Minnesota, surrounded by lakes. I remember the snow. I remember also my grandfather and grandmother lived in Duluth. We used to take the train and go and visit. I remember just things here and there just to show you that it was a good life. There was a lake Pokegama. You know, one of those Indian names, Pokegama. We used to go there in the summertime. I can remember vaguely my father and mother taking me and my sisters to swim in Lake Pokegama. But then sometimes in the winter, we would go out into the snow. I remember there was always a great big can of Thompson's malted milk. I think that was the name of it. It was just stuff you mixed in a malt, chocolate malt. My older sister took care of the two younger sisters, and we'd go out in the snow and we'd make angels. We'd lie down and we'd do like this with your arms like a bird, and you'd get up and it looks like an angel. Then we'd all go in the house and have hot milk and that Thompson's cocoa, and I just adored that. Everything I can remember about Grand Rapids has charm and gaiety. I really remember a white dress that my mother made for me, and that was the first dress I appeared on stage in my father's theater. There's a picture of it. You've seen that picture of a little white sort of net dress. I can remember her making that dress. And I'm looking at that picture, and what a striking picture it is. And it should be, because it was taken by Eric Enstrom in his studio in Bovee. And there is Judy, just a very cute-looking little girl, very determined look on her face. Her two sisters are standing behind her. And, yeah, it's a nice little white dress. Oh, I know what else we used to do in the summertime. We'd go out in the garden, and my sisters used to catch bees in milk bottles. And I always was scared. I'm just trying to show you what we had in those times. We were a normal, happy family, you know. Yes, lots of fun. Oh, lots of fun in my family. For such a mixed-up life later, it started off beautifully. Then at one point, I don't remember just how exactly, my sisters would remember this, I imagine. There was a show at my dad's theater, and it was Christmas time, and I had my white dress on that my mother had made for me. My sisters were up singing on the stage. They were old pros by then. They'd been appearing in the theater for years, and I went up to my mother, who was in the pit, and asked her if I could sing, and she said, well, not tonight, but next week. We went home, and they taught me Jingle Bells to sing on the stage. So I remember going on the stage with the show, and then I sang Jingle Bells, you know. So our first performance was here in Grand Rapids. Everybody started to say it was good, and I liked it. And I just stayed there and stayed, and I sang one chorus after another. And my mother was laughing, but she kept playing, and my father was in the wings saying, come on, you know, get off. And I couldn't hear my father. I guess I fell in love with the lights and the music and the whole thing. Anyway, they couldn't get me off. I must have sung about 9 choruses of Jingle Bells. My father finally came out and got me over his shoulder as I wanted to still go on singing Jingle Bells, and I did keep it up into the wings, trying to get the last minute out of it, and I was a big hit. So yeah, her career underway in Grand Rapids. One just has to state again how poignant her longing for what she could remember of Grand Rapids and all those good memories that she had. And Grand Rapids, of course, remembers her, too, with its annual festival dedicated to her memory every summer. In connection with her 95th birthday, her remains were removed from a New York cemetery, and as her daughters, Liza Minnelli and Lorna Luft, proclaimed, they were taken home to Hollywood and placed in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Thinking of her strongly expressed thoughts in that interview we looked at, in which she stated that she considered Grand Rapids her home and that that was the only place she had ever been happy, we may wonder if it had been her choice, perhaps Grand Rapids would have been the new location. Next time, we got to get back to the Blandin Paper Company, where some big changes are in the offing.